And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And joining me, as always, right, the man who likes the crust on bread, Kyle Phils.
How's it going? Yes, I'm here. Thank you for the introduction, bread.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I'm excited about today's show.
The weather's cooler. We got rain. It's overcast. The sun's not beating down on us.
Yeah, the kids are back in school, so the house is quiet during the day. It's awesome.
Man.
I'm getting excited for the Worlds.
The disc golf
World Championship is going on this week, so I'm excited about that.
If y'all haven't ever seen it, tune in. Jump on over there.
What have you been up to?
I have been helping my son. We've been doing a bunch of work, getting some stuff wrapped up. So I've been going and helping him. And then also we've been keeping my my granddaughter the other night. She wasn't feeling well, so she came and stayed with us because she'd been keeping her mom and dad up. And I'm like, well, hey, look, why don't you let her come stay with us? Y'all can get some rest and she can hang out. So she did. And we had a great time.
That's awesome.
And then other than that, Brad, you know what I'm getting ready to do? I'm going to leave here and I'm going to head to Denton, Texas. To ReaperCon.
That sounds amazing.
Going to go up there and check out miniatures, the biggest little miniature show.
Well, that sounds fun. What also sounds fun is maybe going on your honeymoon and seeing a Sasquatch.
That would be pretty awesome. Yeah. Right? That would be a honeymoon to remember for sure.
Check this out. It says, my husband and I, well, we were newlyweds. Whoop, whoop. When our encounter with Bigfoot happened during the Christmas season up around Odell Lake in Central Oregon. Here's our account of the story. Our account, by the way, is true. And this is what my husband and I saw and what we experienced while on a belated honeymoon Christmas getaway. And no, this did not deter us from the future plans we were making to move to this part of the country at all. Not even a little bit. Actually, it gave us even more of a reason to relocate and live here, as you will soon understand. My husband and I were orphans. It was crazy to meet someone like him, who was, well, just like me, from an adopted home. We met at school after my parents relocated to the Bay Area. Come to find out, a week later, we would also attend the same church as well. Yes, my parents are my loving, awesome parents, and they have raised a pretty well-rounded daughter, I believe. I did great in school. I led a home Bible study to this day and ended up with a degree in marketing. My husband ended up in a very loving home as well. His parents were also believers who loved him and gave him every advantage some orphan children never get to experience. So because of that, he became an organizer for a large Christian outreach program for orphan children around the world. It keeps him at home, but from time to time, he does have to leave for a few days or so at a time, thus the reason for a belated honeymoon. As I said, we both had a lot in common, our faith, our fun, music, movies, and a love for the outdoors. We loved the Pacific Northwest especially. It was this love for the outdoors that led to us having an unexpected run in with this animal, a creature called Bigfoot. It was Christmas time nearly a decade ago. We had been married almost a year at the time. We opted for a December wedding because we were winter freaks, I suppose, and I did not want to wait any longer. Besides, Christmas and anniversary sounded great together. We had been gone for a few days right after our wedding, so we promised each other a belated honeymoon and a Christmas in the Pacific Northwest, preferably Oregon, Central Oregon. That brings me to our encounter, something rather frightening, but interesting all at the same time. And yes, it gave us a Christmas and belated honeymoon we would never forget. Central Oregon it was, Lake Odell to be exact, our 1 year anniversary, and the honeymoon that we missed, and Christmas that year would be spent there. Our parents would meet up with us later, right before Christmas Eve, but we would be there for a whole week before, and a few days after Christmas. We wanted at least 10 days of just enjoying each other and God's green earth together. Well, it turned out to be a white earth with all of the snow. That was fine by us, too. As a matter of fact, we were into sledding and even cross-country skiing. So with everything packed, including skis, we set off for a long drive. It took us hours upon hours to get there, but by nightfall, we made it, all safe and sound. I have to say, it was even more beautiful than I expected. Even as the sun was almost gone, I could only see so far. I could make out the outline of the surrounding mountains, the lake that looked to have frozen edges, and some lights from a couple of cabins that must have been in use nearby. Our cabin was just out of sight of the lodge, yet within the shelter cove section. Within a couple of minutes, we made it to the cabin. We were exhausted and decided to just unpack real quick and turn in for the night. Of course, we could not sleep just yet, so we grabbed some hot tea and enjoyed the warmth of the fireplace. The first night was quiet and pretty much uneventful. It was not until the next day that some odd occurrences and weird things would be noticed and experienced. I was up first the next morning. I grabbed a few things we forgot out of the car and got the skis off the rack and leaned them up against the cabin on the front porch area. I decided to take a quick walk with a hot cup of coffee down by the edge of the lake, which was only about 50 feet from the cabin. As I came to the edge of the lake, I noticed I was correct. The lake was frozen to about 20 or so feet from the shoreline. I also noticed I was not the only visitor to this part of the lake. I saw footprints. At first, it took me a few seconds to grasp what I was even looking at. I even pulled my head up and looked around. I remember wondering who in the world was running around this place barefoot. It was like 30 degrees out that morning, I remember. Clear skies, but 30 degrees. I did not notice if they were overly large at the time or not. All I could really make out was the front half of each foot. Trust me, it was frozen solid down by the lake. Any impression at all would have to be from someone or something very heavy. That was the weird part at the time that made me think for a minute. I looked around at my surroundings a bit and then back down at the footprints that led along the edge of the lake toward the lodge. It was a little odd, I thought, but that was about it. I just thought it was odd. I told my husband over breakfast, and he, like me, agreed there must have been someone not that smart up here this week. The rest of the day was spent having fun, of course. It was midweek, so the crowd was sparse at best, which was fine by us. I have to say, the couple running the resort were awesome people. We had told them about this being our belated honeymoon and our real first Christmas together. With that, they had brought us a Christmas tree and some ornaments for it. It was a sweet gesture, and we took full advantage of that on the second night. We trimmed the tree, ate dinner, and decided to take a walk down by the lake before it got dark. When we walked along the shore, away from the lodge, in a northeasterly direction, it was then that we thought we heard a whistling coming from the woods above us. It whistled more than once, and we could not mistake it. Someone was whistling in the woods. My husband thought nothing of it, only mentioning it was probably just a person passing by. But it seemed odd for a person to be out this close to dark, in the cold, in the woods, just out there whistling. As we walked, the whistles kept coming. Not constantly, but every few minutes or so. Back in the cabin once again, we turned in for the night. The next morning, as usual, I was up before my husband, not wasting 1 minute up there. I filled up my coffee cup and headed out the door for a walk along the lake while my husband slept. As I barely got past where we parked the car when I noticed footprints in the snow again. This time, they were fresh. I was out here yesterday and I would have noticed them. These, however, were rather large. I did notice this time and the length between them. The stride I'm talking about was really long. I would wait until my husband woke up and I'd show him. And I continued with my walk. This time, that morning, I did feel a little bit off while on my walk. I felt like I was being watched. My husband, being the sweetheart he is, called over to the lodge to let them know what we found. It was a husband and wife team, by chance, that ran the place back then. And the husband came over to look at it as well. He joked about it, but he did mention Bigfoot. We all laughed at it, of course, but he did say that there has been over time a few reports of sightings of the creature around the area, but he reassured us that he'd never seen one and he personally didn't believe they even existed. Now, to this day, I believe he was telling us the truth. I think he never heard anything or noticed anything while he or they were there, so we all shook it off to be somebody messing around with us. But who it was? I mean, who could be out there? Why would anybody be out there staying out there and deciding to mess with a couple on their honeymoon? Either way, he said he would keep an extra eye out for us and that we should too. It was my husband that woke up in the middle of the night a couple days later. He was wide-eyed and fully awake. No, he wasn't frightened or scared at all, but he was fully alert and dragged me out of bed over to the window in the kitchen. He propped open the window just a bit, and the cold night breeze almost hurt, to tell the truth, but he insisted I just stand there quietly and listen. He said, just listen. All of a sudden, we heard a strange howling, but not like the type of a dog would make. It sounded almost like screaming or howling coming from the mountains behind the cabin. Later, a month later or so, listening to some recordings when I got back home of Bigfoot, it sounded exactly like that. The sounds were a little strange and weird, chilling in a kind of way. After a few minutes, at the behest of myself to shut the window, my husband reluctantly did so. We chatted again for a few minutes before we both went back to bed. Now, mine and my husband's parents, of course, would be there in just a few days, and all would be well at the cabin. They were going to stay in a cabin right next to ours. It was about 40 or 50 feet away. The footprints and now the howling was starting to make me feel a little uncomfortable. Not for my safety or anything like that, really, looking back on it now, but it was just a feeling of being uncomfortable around our parents, and hopefully they wouldn't get to experience these things too. At the time, we were about to spring it on our folks that we would, inside a year, be moving to Central Oregon. I wanted nothing to make them feel any more worried about it, including Bigfoot. Well, as far-fetched as Bigfoot seemed to me at that moment, it could be a little bit of an issue. Now, the rest of the day, I decided to let it go. I put Bigfoot out of my mind and started focusing on getting things ready and getting in some skiing with my husband. There were no more weird feelings of being watched or no more strange howls for a night or two after that. However, the footprints were still being found every morning all over the place. Some came pretty close to the cabin. Now, the parents would be there the next day, the day after my husband and I realized how real these things, this Bigfoot species, really is. Christmas Eve, it was the weekend, and we decided to get some cross-country skiing in. It was a clear day. The snow had stopped snowing, and clear skies were there to be the weather pattern for the next few days. No creepy feelings came on that day either, I remember. But then again, there were a lot of people enjoying the snow that weekend, especially the last day of the weekend. Like many animals, maybe being a little fearful and weary of the humans, some of the stories I hear seem to fly in the face of that belief. But when you see these things and know they are there, well, I think they would rather not be involved with people at all, for the most part at least. But back to this day, it was great, all of it. I was having a great Christmas vacation and a wonderful honeymoon. Telling you the truth, it was one of the best parts of my life. And I kind of put the footprints and the howling out of my mind. However, that wouldn't last. We had eaten dinner. I made some cookies earlier for dessert, some hot cocoa with peppermint. I always add peppermint to my cocoa. We were wrapping gifts for our parents when I noticed some movement near the kitchen window. Mind you, the kitchen window is rather high off the ground and larger than you'd expect for a rental cabin in the woods. Whatever it was, I could not see the street light down the way, by the way, towards the lodge, like I usually could through the window. Whatever it was blocking it. As I looked out the window, it only took seconds, and then all of a sudden, well, I felt a sense of shock go right through me. I grabbed my husband's arm tightly, so tightly that he even made a sound. It was so hard. He followed my gaze, and at that moment, out the kitchen window. Now, I have seen a film of Bigfoot since then, and I have to say, there was a film of one walking through the forest in the Sierras somewhere, I believe by a Forest Service guy, and that was it. That looked exactly like what I was looking at, except I could see the face and the upper torso as well. Most of the upper torso, anyways. What I do know for a fact is that this thing was slightly bent down to look through the window. Its face was not human, but it did have a human likeness to it. The report of an ape-like nose, I can understand. However, it was not smashed down like a great ape. You could see a sort of rounded nose that was longer than it was smashed. The skin was dark gray. Not gray, but darker gray, like a real dark, stormy sky before a bad storm. It had no ears sticking out, and the hair seemed to be dark, dark brown. At least that's what it looked like to me. The eyes were huge. It just looked scary. There was a little hair between the nose and lower forehead area. We got a good look at this thing. It was wrinkly, too, very wrinkly. It looked at us through the window as if it was curious, but frustrated at the same time. Or perhaps it was just wanted us to leave. I don't know. It blinked once, then turned and just walked off. We immediately jumped up, locked the front door, and shut off the lights. We had no gun with us at the time, so we were rather frightened for our own safety because of that fact. We stood there for about 3 or 4 minutes just staring out the window, talking about what we just saw. While in the middle of talking, or whispering more like it, the creature, the Bigfoot thing, came back into view, except closer to the tree line, about 30 yards from the cabin. It was tall, but compared to me, anything's tall. I'm only 5'6". If I had to guess, I'd say it was about 7 to 7.5 feet. It was standing near a large pine tree, a Douglas fir, if I remember correctly. It was visible because the streetlight near the lodge was casting a backlight on it. I could not make out the face anymore at this distance, but it was tall and had long arms and seemed to have a slight bend at the hips as it walked away. I remember the thing had a funny-looking gait. When people say it steps 1 foot in front of the other, it does, but I still think it walked kind of strange, not what I would expect. Anyways, the rest of the weekend went on. No other instances. We didn't tell our parents about what we saw, and we eventually moved here in Oregon. And to this day, I will never forget what me and my husband saw on our honeymoon. Thanks for everything, Jill. Well, that was a long-winded story, but a very interesting one nonetheless. Could you imagine being up there and just enjoying the weekend skiing cam in a cabin, and then you start seeing footprints and hearing howls, and then eventually this thing's looking in your window?
I would love that. I would love to be able to find footprints in the snow up there like that.
That would be cool.
That would be awesome.
You know, and they described that they could tell by the footprints that they were somewhat barefoot.
Yes.
And, you know, you've walked through snow barefooted. It doesn't go, you can't do it very long. You're not Cody Lundeen. I mean, right?
No.
You start walking around, you're like, start hopping.
Me especially.
Right?
So I can't imagine going up there, because that's the last thing you're thinking about, right? Like, truly,
yeah.
The last thing anybody's thinking about when you go on vacation is, man, you know what I can't wait for? Them Bigfoot sightings.
Yeah.
So it's not even in your mind. And then all of a sudden there's tracks.
Well,
and then there's more tracks. And then there's whistling. And then it just increases and increases.
And Jill mentions, you know, that they eventually moved to that area of Oregon, mm-hmm. not because of this, they had already had plans to move there, but that they weren't frightened. And to this day, they are both members of a Bigfoot research group. They go out there continually, even up to this day. They have a son now, they take him with them, hoping to get another glimpse, and they've never had another encounter, but they want to see it again.
I love that part that, you know, because we've talked about multiple times, there's people that have these encounters and then they're never the same. They never go to the woods. They never do anything like that again. And then it also goes the other way to where you're like, you know what? I want to go see if that's out there. I got to go find it again.
Yeah.
I like that.
They don't claim that they were terrified or scared. Like you said, they're just curious.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to leave you here with one before we jump into the break here to pick up the segment. I've got to tell you this story, Kyle, because I know you love giant birds as much as I do. And I don't mean just giant ones. I mean huge cryptid birds observed in northern, well, just one, in northern India.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
A Vimana.
Now, right? Salon fires this up over. Now, I love it. He always knows how to get it going, right? Says, this is a story that I'm not sure even I believe anymore. But at the time, I will swear to God, I felt it was 100% real. It was back when I was a teenager and my house in northern India had a medium-sized garden adjoining the front of the house. I and my friend always loved to look at the sky for eagles because at the time we felt like they were pretty big and mysterious. Well, this one time I came out of my house to go to my friend's house next door, but decided to stand in front of the garden to look for eagles in the sky. I was looking up for about a minute or so when I looked down and saw what I believed to be the biggest eagle there could ever be standing in the corner of the garden, covering about 40% of it.
Wow, standing.
Standing. It was black with a brown and gold neck, and I'm not sure how to scale it because I was fairly far from the garden, but it was 5 to 6 meters wide. I'm not sure because it's been a while, and I've never really shared this story before, so I was extremely shocked to see a bird so big. 5 to 6 meters wide, homie. That's a big, big bird.
Very okay? big.
I quickly ran into my home screaming to call my older brother to see the bird, and he caught me running and asked why I was screaming. I told him to quickly come out and see this huge eagle. We both walked through the front door and this bird was gone. I looked up at the sky for a good minute and didn't see it flying anywhere, nor did I see its wingspan, but it definitely looked like an eagle bigger than a fully grown peacock. Now, I know this sounds really unbelievable, and this is the reason why I'm not, you know, so sure myself of what I saw was real or not. But now at the time, I was fully aware and fully sure that it was real. I definitely wasn't dreaming, and I will swear to anything that I'm not making this up and that this actually happened. Still, I find it amazing that something like that actually happened to me, and I thought this was worth sharing, SV. So this is, I love the take.
Mm-hmm.
I swear this is real, but I'm not sure what I saw. Now, they start talking about there's a southern Asian bird called the Garuda, and the Garuda is like a semi-god in Hindu culture, So I guess that, like, I'm sorry, there was, the Garuda is a god, like a bird god, I guess.
Like a sky god.
Yeah, yeah. But there's no, like in this area, they said there's no possible natural explanation. There's no birds this size.
No, the largest eagle on Earth is like the Marshall Eagle, mm-hmm. and it has a wingspan of like 9 feet.
Yeah.
So they're talking about something with a wingspan like 16 feet. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, double that.
And big enough to cover 40% of the garden. So it's standing upright and its thing is, it's a huge bird.
Yeah.
I wonder how many sightings like this happen that never get reported. But what I do appreciate about this is the willingness, SV's willingness to say, look, I don't know what I saw, but I know it was real, that what I saw and what I experienced was real. And that's what you and I talk about with these Bigfoot sightings or any of this paranormal stuff, is it affects you, whether it was real or not, or, but you, like, I know what I saw was a big bird.
Yeah, I can't explain it to you. I know I sound crazy. I love it when people describe it like that. Like, look, I know it sounds crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is what I saw.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if, you know, it was like a ghost of a dinosaur, you know, an ancient bird that was that size.
Well, and just like we've talked about here, how many things can live around this world that we still don't know about? Like, maybe there's one-offs. Like, we have people that grow to be giants, right? We've had them. Maybe there's one-offs in nature that just every now and again you just see one, like that giant alligator on the golf course down there in Florida that we saw walking around.
Yeah,
right? You see those videos of that thing, you're like, goodness. So maybe there are giant birds out there. I like to believe that there are. And speaking of belief, folks, stick around, because after the break, I'm going to get you to believe it in some really creepy stories that take place at some colleges around the United States, folks. Stay around. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Okay, y'all, like I alluded to a little earlier, today I'm going to be talking about haunted campuses, right? With football season, let's say college football season is something that I enjoy. I don't follow it as much as I used to. When I was younger, I used to really keep up with it. I don't follow it as much as I used to. I don't really follow pro ball like you hear me and Kyle talk about. We don't really watch football and all that, but we will occasionally tune into some good college football games, college baseball. I'm a big fan of college baseball, right? College wrestling and all these things. Well, that's kind of what sent me down this path. I remember reading, you know, the stories of people going missing on those colleges in the missing 411 books. They can't find them. They're in town, you know, all this stuff. And I started looking more into this, right? Like, there's got to be some really good tales. And these are old buildings. You know, these colleges were founded a long time ago. So surely there's some pretty good tales. And I've covered some in the past. And now I found some more that I want to talk about. Now, it's not just so much with the hauntings. There's also some strange things. Like, we all, what is the movie? Is it Skull and Bones? Isn't that the movie? Because I know, so this actually comes from Yale, right? Yale University, what was it like in the 1830s? I believe is when that stuff started, but it was Skull and Bones. It's a secret society there. So they're supposed to be like the seniors and all the stuff and the famous bonesmen, all of these things, right? So that's just like the tip of the sword. You can only imagine if that's what you know, and they've made movies about it and this thing is big, you can only imagine what else might be hiding there, right? What else is just under the surface on all of these crazy college campuses? Well, Harvard's got one all the way back from 1636. There's a bunch of secret rooms and false bookcases all through a bunch of these buildings, right? One of them, one of the libraries there, is named Dunster House. Now, that library has swinging bookshelves leading into little secret rooms. If that's not cool, I don't know what is. I've always wanted that. What sounds better than you could invite your friends over to a big library at your house or whatever, right? And you're like, hey, come here. You pull one of the doors or you push and it swings open. You go in there and then there's your man cave, right? That's where you're hiding out. Nothing nefarious. You just in there getting your fantasy football college on. But now you've got your crazy hidden passageways. I don't know why I love that so much, the idea of that. But that's another thing, too. Ohio State. Excuse me. Ohio State actually has a whispering wall. Yeah, that's right. You heard me. It is said that students use it to communicate, like they communicate with this thing. It says the wall looks just like an ordinary or just like a strange, I'm sorry, like staircase. But it allows one person whispering to be heard by anyone at the end of the hall. Yeah. So I guess whenever they built it, maybe with the architecture, they monkeyed around with it in there and played around with it till they could get it to sound like that. It's pretty cool, though, to have a whisper room where you could get on one end. But how would you wouldn't want to not know about that, right? You wouldn't want to be up there talking smack about one of your buddies or a couple of girls. Or you're like, hey, you know, my girl, you know, she's, you know, and you run in your mouth and look down there at the end of the hall. She can hear you loud and clear. Like, yeah, that's going to be probably not such a good thing, right? Now, here's something else that's a little bit crazier. So the College of the Holy Cross actually has a room for exorcism. Yeah. Now, apparently it's told, and there's a big thing in there about this Fenwick exorcism. The students there at Holy Cross understand this whole thing. It was an unsuccessful exorcism in a patient at a lunatic hospital there, okay? Now, apparently what happened was it left behind demonic residue, and that it's made its way, I guess, into this area. And now that there's a wall that blocks the students from entry where they can't even go into this exorcism room. So that's pretty wild, too, because there's supposed to be a staircase in there called the Staircase to Nowhere. Yeah, so maybe it's hidden somewhere on it. Who knows? Who knows what they got hid in any of these little sneaky rooms? There's sub-basements in a bunch of these. Swarthmore College actually has a sub-basement in it. So they built it and then built it even more to hide down in the bottom where you can slip down there like a big bomb shelter under a basement. Could you imagine? Man, you hope that thing doesn't collapse. That would be horrible, right? Well, that's not just it. We're not just talking about crazy little backstories, crazy little things that happen. What I'm talking about now is ghosts. We're going to get into people seeing and interacting with things on college campuses, and you don't realize how much is tied till you start looking. Now, the one that you got to jump off with, the one that I always think about, I used to be a big fan of these guys when I was early high school, I guess it was. And it's Notre Dame. I was a big fan of Notre Dame University. That's right. Now, there's a little story here. So there's a Notre Dame football player who gave the famous win one for the Gipper, right? This whole speech, okay? So this whole thing, and it was talked, of course, you know, it was, I believe it was it Newt Rockne? Was that whatever he talked about it. Well, this story is believed that George Gipp, it's his ghost, I believe, is believed to be on there. People talk about he's seen hovering behind them. People have talked about feeling him pat them on the shoulder. People see them, and then he vanishes behind people. All of these things go on in this little area, and they've also got another one around Columbus Hall. It's believed that Columbus Hall at Notre Dame was actually built on burial grounds of the Potawatomi Indians, and that there are recorded hearing even sounds of horses' hooves, hearing the sound of chatter. They also talk about even seeing them riding horses. People have talked about seeing the horses and the warriors on the steps of the hall riding around it, like it's protecting the whole place, like they've just adopted it or whatever it's going on. I can't imagine seeing the ghostly apparition of Native American warriors riding horses on your college. That right there would be, I guess, a reason to drink, right? I mean, if you're going to have a college party and you're going to see Native American ghost warriors, I'd be drinking. If you weren't drinking before you saw them, you might want to start because it would make you feel better, right? Now, Penn State University had a student named Betsy back in 1969. And the story goes that Betsy was doing some research for one of her English classes. And she was in the Pate Library and she was murdered. She was killed there. Now, the story says that it's completely unsolved. Even today, they don't know. But the story tells also that Betsy never left, that she is in the library. She stays in the library. People that work there, students, also report seeing her. One student talks about falling asleep in this area and being awoken with the feeling of being strangled, the sensation of the tightening of the neck, like you could feel hands on your neck. Not saying it was Betsy that did it. Maybe it was. Maybe it was just happened to be the same spirit, just the reliving of the memory. I'm not sure what it was, of course, but that's what they were talking about. So, and she's quite famous. You start looking around and on there, and I need to find some good Penn State students. I would talk to Pop, but Pop can't tell us. I need to ask him, though. He may have heard the stories, at least now, from other people, too. Anyhow, that's just like the tip of the iceberg on all these things. Oh, there's also an axe murderer that they say haunts around Brumbaugh Hall there at Penn State as well, too. Like, it's no big deal. Oh, yeah, there's an axe murderer over there. This ghost of this axe murderer. But, of course, and this always comes up, too. They say, there's a lot of reports of it on, in and around Halloween, the days of on and around Halloween, which is always funny, right? It always ramps up. Is it because it's ramping up or because we're looking or because we want to see it more? Who knows, right? Who knows? Not to be outdone, we've got to go to Slippery Rock University, to the Alpha Sigma Pi fraternity house, okay? It's an off-campus home. Now, apparently, they have a roommate there that they call Ted. Now, Ted lives in this place. Now, Ted likes to make a lot of racket. Ted likes to bang doors. Ted likes to knock stuff off shelves. Ted likes to stomp around on the floors. Ted likes to let everybody know he's there, even though you can't see him. Right? And also, they say that Ted doesn't apparently enjoy being called Ted. Yeah. It's not his name, and I guess he's tried to tell him. Maybe that's why he's so aggravated. I don't know. But they talk that Ted was always there making noises, right? Ted was always doing a few things. But the minute they started talking to him and giving him, I guess, the power and calling him Ted, well, Ted don't like that. That's when Ted got a little more aggressive. Things started getting a little more popping off around there. School Spirits, the sci-fi show, even did a story about it. So you could go and check that out if you want to see old Ted in action. We can't leave that. If we're going to talk about Ted, we got to talk about Bulldogs, right? While we're going on there. University of Georgia, they're in Athens. It's another old school, right? Very old school. There is a lot of tales of ghostly Confederate soldiers. They've been seen in and out around the area. The Phi Mu, I hope I'm saying this right. I don't know what this Phi Mu sorority house. There is also allegedly haunted. Not by Ted. Ted's not franchising all the haunting and all these things, although he should. I guess he should. This is by a person who they claim is a girl named Anna Hamilton. Now, they say Anna Hamilton, and I don't know why it's with this thing here, but they say that Anna, I guess she was part, like, I guess she saw her boyfriend murdered. It doesn't really say if it's not him, but it was his boyfriend was murdered or her boyfriend was murdered. Doesn't really say that she was. Maybe, who knows how all this thing plays out. But however it goes, the story tells that students will get out Ouija boards and want to go talk to her. Yeah. They also report that going into certain rooms, you could wait in these empty rooms and that you will hear crying. And that's, I'm like, that's not good. There's another haunted house there on the University of Georgia, there's another haunted frat house. I believe it is a frat house. It's Alpha Gamma. Oh, it's a sorority, Alpha Gamma Delta. And apparently it's one of the oldest ones there, but it is also a haunted house. This one is apparently haunted by a young woman who took her own life around her wedding day. Now, it doesn't say why. Of course, you go into it. These are the stories I have to tell you. Like, if you start researching them and looking into them, reading more books on and each individual story, they change it around. And what I mean, this is what makes it hard. What I mean by that is people add their own inflections, right? It may just say heartbroken and that was it, or on our wedding day. But then they start adding more stories of she was jilted by her lover, her lover died. There's, you know, it always changes on any way that you go. So when you hear it, just go with it. Just think of whatever it was that made her heartbroken on her wedding day. Must have been terrible. But the story goes that she hung herself in this house, in the attic. It's always the attic, right? Never the basement, always the attic. So she hung herself in this attic, and they claim that she haunts not only the inside of this home, but around it as well. And what I mean by that is they say that you will catch glimpses, like you'll be up late at night studying, and you'll be look, and there'll be glimpses, and she's looking through the window at you. You know, very unsettling, yeah, right? The whole idea of being watched. Same thing, footsteps, cold spots, wind, movement. They get a bunch of that stuff, hearing things. The feeling of, and I thought this was very unique, because they've reported this in a few of these hauntings. Being in a room, feeling fine, studying, reading, doing whatever you're doing, only to not have that good feeling anymore, right? Like instantly, it's just like they flipped a switch and something happened, but nobody walked in. I've always thought that was extremely, extremely unnerving. I've never had that feeling of sitting there and then all of a sudden it just instantly goes, oh, I got this feeling of dread when you don't. That's probably a telltale sign. You need to get up and go, or, you know, maybe it's time to go to bed, or put that calculus work to the side, right? I'm going to blame it on calculus. We're also going to talk about Athens, Ohio, at Ohio University. Yeah, a lot of hauntings go in and around there. And it's also highly documented. You go online, you can pull up stuff on YouTube. It's very well documented, all the things that go on around Ohio University, from like entire ghostly basketball teams. Yeah, that's right. Pretty crazy, huh? Voices, again, students start hearing chatter, open the door, there's nothing. Here's something that I found interesting. And I didn't delve any further into this, but it is believed that nearly, and they don't give the percentage, but they just say nearly every building on the campus of Ohio University has at least one ghost associated with it. Just one. Yeah. Or, you know, at least one. Isn't one enough? I don't think you need like a dozen in there, right? Like, yeah, I get it. Everybody's got a ghost. You don't got to show out like that. Weird flex. You got a bunch of ghosts. I get it. I don't want to see all those things. But yeah, a ghostly basketball team, that would be something. That would be something that you would want to take a look at. There's plenty of shows on, like I said, online that you can go, you can check out. The story goes, there's some of them. One of them is, and this is where it always goes, right? A woman, a female student, they claim was doing some sort of satanic ritual there at the college, and they don't really say when this was. It could have been a while back. Anyway, they say that she was doing a satanic ritual, died during this ritual very violently. There's nothing you can really say. Like, that's what I said. As you look into it, it doesn't seem like there's anything that happened. It just seems like there are a lot of voices that's heard throughout this entire place, up and down the halls of all these buildings, which easily, I guess you could say there might've been people in there, right? And that's what they heard. But there's also doors that open and close on their own, locking and unlocking. And then you see ghostly apparitions of students and people in these halls and around these buildings. So yeah, probably got a little validity to some of that stuff. If you jump to California State University there in the Channel Islands, there's also some wild stuff because they built the grounds, or they built this whole university on the grounds of an old insane asylum. So Cal State thought, you know what, this would be a good idea. So, and they say this is only back in 02. And since 02, when this thing opened, there's reports of people seeing like inmates, all right, the people that were there in this asylum, their spectral spirits moving all around the grounds, on the streets of Cal State, all through the halls of the buildings, all down through there. What's even crazier is that they talk about there are a few places that it will knock things over. Like whatever it is will vandalize things, break stuff in the classrooms. People report feeling being brushed, being touched and bumped by whatever possibly that these things could be. Mad spirits, right? Ted and his boys. Ted and his boys are making the rounds. That's what it is. Now you're going to jump to another house here. We've got the Sigma Phi Epsilon chapter in Marshall University. Okay. And that's in West Virginia. Country roads, y'all. They apparently have Gail. Gail's a mother, two children. And they claim that occupy that house in there. Yeah, that's right. That Gail watches over all of this, all the people that live in there in this frat house. And I'm sure she's seen some things, right? Like Gail's had a rough one, right? That's not what you would want for anybody to be stuck for eternity in a frat house, right? Like, I don't think so. The story goes that this was the home that her and her children perished in years and years ago, or there was a home there that burned in this fire. And that when they built all this stuff and all that, that this is, she's still kind of lingering around here, so much so that they claim that there are, you can hear crying coming from the basement of this place, sobbing, like it, very heart-wrenching stuff. Right now, we'll jump over to Pi Beta Phi, which is a sorority there for women at Kansas State University. Story goes, in the 60s, this old gal was in there doing her hair, getting her bouffant on, flying it up real big, and got electrocuted by her hair dryer. And from maybe that's what left her here is what it is, because apparently Lambda Chi Alpha took this house over in the 90s. And this young woman, who was a Pi Beta, didn't like that, right? Now they're going to be butting heads. So the story goes that this woman would just pretty much torment all of this stuff forever. And it's not terrible, but it is enough to freak you out. Closing and opening doors, slamming doors, lights going off and on, randomly just turn lights on whenever they feel like it, turn lights off. And this sister's name is Polly. So Polly's not down with the Lambda Chi, right? She is a Pi Phi sister, right? That's how she's throwing down. We can't leave out Illinois. Illinois Wesleyan University, which is got a really unique thing that I didn't understand until looking into this, is it's named after theologian John Wesley. Well, John Wesley talked about having poltergeist experience in his home as a child, all the way back then. So he held a very strong belief in ghosts, which is a pretty good thing, because there are a lot that pop off around here in Kemp Hall International House. But Kemp Hall there's believed to be a lady in red, a woman named Miss Demange. And there, I believe it said that she's also took her own life. And that's, they believe, one of the reasons that she haunts this area. There's Adams Hall. Adams Hall on this place too has, and I believe I've covered Adams Hall in the past, about a, there's like three ghosts at Adams Hall. One was a young girl. One was a woman, I'd say younger woman, probably in her 30s. I believe what they say, they want to say like she's a younger woman, but that she had died in a carriage accident. Then a little girl, and then there was one more, and I can't remember what it is. But anyway, there's one I remember like ringing bells. That they would hear through there. They would hear crying. They would hear the sound of footsteps. People would, hear all this noise up and down this whole area. There's also a music fraternity, which sounds pretty cool. Phi Mu Alpha, who, according to their whole thing too, that there was a girl that in the home that this fraternity is built in. It's pretty rough here. That in the home, the daughter, this used to be a doctor that lived there, had his family that lived there, and the daughter fell in love with a sailor, right? Now, that used to be extremely frowned upon back in the day. For those that don't know, you start going back, like, 40s, 50s, 30s, that sailors were kind of, they were thought of as a bit wild, I guess, and roguish, right? Story goes that they fell in love, and she becomes with child, and the father, being a doctor, is like, we're not having this, and tries to do that thing. He tries to abort the baby himself and kills not only the baby, but her. She passed away during it. And the story goes on from there, that he then hid her body in the basement and buried them down there. And ever since then, people started, well, I can't say ever since then, I would say, if, you know, some years later, people had started reporting seeing her in white moving all around through the house. People have even reported seeing her sitting on couches, standing in corners, sitting at dinner tables, standing just randomly in a kitchen, like just very unnerving things of like, she's just lost, right? She has no idea where she's at. She has no idea. She's just kind of stuck. And that's the way that they kind of make this thing seem. But it doesn't just stop there. I want to talk to you here, this little story about a place, Newport Beach, California, right? Santa Barbara County there, a college. Here we go. It says, I have two stories of people I know personally who had kind of a similar thing happen on a college campus. They both happened my freshman year of college. The first time, it was a buddy of mine from the dorms. We'd all been out partying and stuff, you know. We'd been drinking, but all of us were coherent. We weren't blacked out drunk or anything. And anyway, we're going back to the dorms at the end of the night, and one of my buddies had his bicycle with him. Well, the rest of us are walking, and he's kind of just riding circles around us talking. And finally, he takes off once we get to campus. He heads out south towards the dorms. So we figured, all right, we're going to get back to the dorms. He's going to be there waiting for us. Well, we get back to the dorms, but he's not there. So we wait around. We figure maybe he got food or something. And so he doesn't turn up for like an hour. So we start calling and texting him. No response. Finally, he answers the phone after about 2 hours. And he, you know, all we hear is super heavy breathing. And we're trying to talk to him like, hey, man, where are you? What's going on? And it's just super heavy breathing. And finally, we start hearing him. And it's kind of like mumbling. We can't really make out what he's saying. And then he hangs up the phone. So we went back out and started looking for him around campus and stuff, but nothing. We couldn't find him. So the next day comes and he shows up about 1 p.m. He comes back to the dorm and he looks like hell. He's wearing the same clothes as he had the night before. He looks terrible. And we're like, dude, what happened? He goes, man, I don't know. I woke up in a field like 6 miles north of campus. Now, the last time we saw him, he was biking south. He winds up 6 miles north. He's like, yeah, I woke up in a field. My bike's gone. I have no idea what happened, and I just had to walk home. So to this day, we have no idea what happened to him. We were all experienced with alcohol and whatnot. We knew how to handle our drinks. None of us were blacked out. We were all coherent. Otherwise, I would have just figured he was super drunk and had no idea, but we saw him heading south onto campus. I mean, he rode onto campus, which is well lit. There are police officers patrolling, you know, and he winds up far north. It's a super weird, but it gets stranger. About 2 months later, my roommate doesn't come home after one night of partying, which was normal for him. He had, you know, had went out with friends that lived off campus, and he would occasionally crash there with them at night. And so he doesn't come home, and I think, all right, he's just staying with his buds. Well, the next day, he doesn't come back. Next morning, I figure, okay, maybe they got breakfast together. They're hanging out, whatever. But the afternoon, I'm starting to get weirded out. Sure enough, a couple of his friends that he would have been staying with come knock on the door and say, hey, have you seen so-and-so? And I said, no, I haven't seen him. I thought he was with you guys. Sure enough, they're like, dude, he left the party last night. None of us have seen him. He's not answering his phone. We don't know where he is. Last we heard from him, he posted a video of this. It's Snapchat, where you can post short videos of yourself. They're like, he posted a couple of videos of him riding his bike down a big street, just like breathing super heavy. We couldn't figure this out. Finally, turns out we call the county sheriff thinking, well, okay. So then we call the hospital. Well, we called the sheriff trying to figure out if they picked him up. Turns out they picked him up about a half a mile away from the field where my other buddy had spent the night. They picked him up further down the road driving a golf cart. He lost his bike somehow and wound up on a golf cart. But he was totally healthy. What do y'all think about that, right? Wakes up the next morning. I don't know where he stole the golf cart from, but apparently has time slipped in some weird places on this college. Two people within 2 months on the exact, or within the area of the exact same spot, right? That is crazy. That is really, really, really wild here. Now, here's one from Washington State University. I think you're going to dig this one. It says, this encounter occurred on February 2nd, 2016 at around 5 to 8 p.m. in Pullman, Washington. I was living in Pullman, working and completing graduate degrees at Washington State. I know the exact date because I have a habit or a hobby of writing bad poetry. And so when phrases pop into my head that I want to write down, I jot it in the notes on my phone. And that day I wrote, and this is true, I'm afraid to walk alone, afraid I'll meet the devil on the road. Until writing this, I had honestly forgotten about the strange detail of the story, which in retrospect is probably the least explainable aspect, as it implies the encounter was somehow more than coincidental. Pullman's a small college town that's extremely walkable. For anyone who may be reading this familiar with the area, I commuted on foot daily from Lamont Street on Military Hill, down the walking biking path, and up College Hill via Stadium Way, mostly to campus. So I would walk down a hill, through a valley on a bike path, and up a well-lit hill into a college campus, taking about 45 minutes. Some other relevant details about Pullman are that it's extremely isolated, surrounded by rolling wheat fields to an extreme degree of deforestation, basic solely populated by local townsies and undergraduates. The sun goes down famously early in any season but summer. Drunk undergraduates are common, but very uncommon, far from College Hill, which is where this encounter took place. It's not enough of a town to have a homeless population, and drifters are few and far between. So to the point, I walked home that evening in the dark, as I had hundreds of times. Upon reaching nearly the base of the street that I lived on, where the bike path would lead up the nearby road, Grand Avenue, I saw the form of a humanoid crouched in the path ahead. And while the road is somewhat lit, the bike path is down a small berm from the road and is very poorly lit in this spot. From about 60 feet out, I began to feel afraid, as I could not make out much about the form. About 30 or 40 foot from the crouched form, I stopped. I think if the figure were wearing clothes or had human skin of any shade, it would have caught more light. Instead, it looked too large to be human, its back too curved, its head too far forward. And though I saw no evidence of fur, the context suggested to me very heavily it was fur covered. My inner dialogue ran through these options, and nothing made sense. If it was human, it was a very tall man crouched over as if balling himself up on the road, back deeply arched over. If it was not, it was humanoid, and something people do not generally believe exists. Those are really the only two options. I began to have a fight or flight response. I said, "Hey," at a moderate volume, something like two or three times. The form moved. It looked like it was turning its head toward or away from me. I never saw eyes of any kind, and the light never caught it. It just looked hunched over, crouched humanoid in the middle of a bike path at night, too large to be a person whose high school didn't try to get him on the basketball team. And hey, maybe it was a drunk basketball player half a mile from campus, maybe not. I was torn between the realization that I was potentially witnessing something fantastic and the will to live beyond the moment. The will to live, or fear, I guess, won. I immediately clambered up the embankment to the road, crossed the road, and walked the rest of the way home on the other side. The height difference, darkness, and existence of the burn kept me from seeing the form any further. I walked up the hill to my apartment, locked the door, and reflected on the bad poem line I had jotted down earlier. I wondered if I was being followed by some evil creature and would be further haunted. But nothing else happened, and it became a funny story I told my friends in town. I don't know if this story and its details might be useful to anyone, but I needed to post it. Now, this is a true story. It honestly happened, and I have no explanation for it, because even if it was a human, it's a strange coincidence with the note. Maybe the most likely scenario was a stressed out grad student just hallucinated. Y'all, I hope you enjoyed the crazy stories of some creepy frat houses, sorority houses, creepy everything that goes on. I didn't realize, like we talked about with Ohio, how haunted that really is. Ohio State is apparently a haunted place. That entire college, can't imagine. They said there's only like a handful of buildings that don't have at least one ghost in it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought up this topic of college, because college football is like firing up, man.
I told y'all he'd be ready for it, right?
It's going to be time. There's some good games. I'm not really looking forward to Texas versus Alabama, though.
I am.
That's probably going to be a beating.
I am.
And not in a good way. Not for me.
I'm looking forward now to, of course, what, I got two more years before Texas plays A&M again?
Yeah, I think that.
I think before they roll into the SEC, because I think it's 25 when they come in, them and OU.
Yeah.
It'll be good. It'll be real good.
Yeah, but I'm excited to watch a little college football. I always enjoy that kind of stuff. And I enjoy the good, I always enjoy a good ghost story.
Oh, man.
But speaking of ghost stories, we got a listener named Gabe that called in with a cool story about, I don't know what he saw. Check this out.
Hey, guys. Good evening. My name is Gabe. You can throw that in there. I live in Carrollton, Texas, so I'm not too far from you guys, about 10 miles north of Dallas. I drive a truck, which I'm doing right now. Actually, I'm working. Yeah, I'm just calling in with this weird story, man. It happened about a month and a half ago. I drive a day cab, man, so I'm not over the road anymore. So there's no sleeper on these things. And they're pretty straight runs. I don't have, you know, a whole lot of deliveries or anything like that. It's just line haul is what it's called. So like me, I'll go up to Norman, you know, from Dallas, our yard in Dallas. Maybe branch out, go to a lot in Oklahoma, maybe Clinton, hell, even up in Chandler, Oklahoma. Or I'll go to San Antonio, Houston, Austin, and that's a kind of mix of my week. I work 5 days a week. Really enjoy what I do. You know, I drive majority of the time is at night, but I do a lot of stuff out of Norman, Oklahoma. So, right now I'm going up. I just left Ardmore. I got some fuel. But a lot of times I'll have to wait, and we haul for a dairy, so it's a separate company. I work for an employee-owned company, but we'll haul out of this dairy. It's an old dairy in downtown Norman, not too far from, I guess, Oklahoma University, the Sooners. You know, it's a big college town. There's some good-looking girls. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on there at night, and so generally I'm there, you know, midnight, 4 a.m., stuff like that. I might have to burn 5 hours just sitting waiting for a load, but you know, after 3 years of working at this company, I got to the point where, you know, I'm just not the type of guy that wants to just sit there. So, you know, I'll go for a walk, man, and I try to walk away from downtown. There's a lot of homeless people and stuff, crazy shit. But I notice there's a lot of, like, old architecture in some of the houses. And, you know, so I just, they're not cookie-cutter homes, you know, they're old school, 40s, 50s. The architecture, the lay of the roads, you know, so I just enjoyed it, you know, get some fresh air, get my blood flowing. So about a month ago, I'm walking, kind of grooving, still in Norman. I'm probably southeast downtown, not too far, maybe a couple miles. And I'm working my way down these streets, you know. I don't try to stop and stare too long. You know, I don't be a freaking creeper or nothing. But I was coming up on, it was a bend. It was basically a T, okay? But the side that I was on the right side of the road, and it kind of just slowly turns. I had like two or three houses to go. I'm on the old sidewalk, and somebody's got their sprinkler on them. So I'm like, I remember thinking, all right, I'm not going to walk through this. I remember looking to the left, and there's a really dark area across the street, and it's a park. I can't see anything in the darkness, but I was like, all right, I'm going to make my way over there and look across. And then I noticed there's movement at the house that has the sprinkler. There's movement, and they have two cars. There's a floodlight in their front yard. It's not an LED. It's like a, you know, a warm color. I don't know what the hell, the older style ones, you know? So I see this dog bebopping down their slight incline of a driveway, and he doesn't notice me. And I know it's a he because I saw the junk, you know. It was about the size of a greyhound. Decent size, I guess a medium-sized dog. Really, really short hair. Very, very thin. I wouldn't say, like, you know, starving, but just genetically, that's, you know, how it was designed. I'm stopped already because of that sprinkler. There's a tree to my left. You know that chunk of grass in between the curb and where the street begins and the sidewalk and then the person's yard? So it's still technically their yard. There's a tree maybe 20, 22 feet in front of me, about 3 foot in diameter. And I'm watching this dog, and, you know, I don't take my eyes off it. And it just seems like a goofy dog. He's bebopping down, you know. And my first inclination is like, okay, their dog got out, you know, and I'm not moving. It's like brown, reddish brown hair. But I'm watching him, man. My eyes don't move from this whole picture, okay? It's like he all of a sudden he just puts his head down, and it took me about 5 days, man. It's not, I'm trying to process this thing, but it almost looked like he was putting his head down as he's entering behind the tree. My perspective, he was going towards the tree, heading towards the street. Well, I watch him. He puts his head down a little bit, goes behind the tree. He doesn't even come out the other side, bro. Like, and again, my eyes aren't moving from this whole thing. I'm like, okay, after maybe two or three texts, I go, what, you know, I mean, I don't even look away. I start making my way into the street, never taking my eyes off the situation, expecting this dog, because I don't, you know, I don't want to tangle with a dog, maybe it's a wild dog or something. So I'm keeping my distance. I'm about 25 feet away still from the situation, just going around in a circle around the tree. I'm in the street at this point. The dog is nowhere. The dog literally just freaking disappeared, man. And, man, immediately, you know, I'm into this paranormal stuff, but, you know, I don't want to tangle with anything, but I start processing it like any normal person would, and I do my JFK magic bullet moment, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, where is that? Is there a gutter? There's no gutters. It's just the street, the dark park, which, I don't know, it's about 30, maybe 25 yards across, you know? And then the street going ahead of me, where my eyes were looking when I was watching this whole thing, I mean, it's well lit, and it's got to be 40 yards of, you know, nothing obstructing my view. So it's just a tree. And then maybe 7 foot in front of that, or beyond that, the same house has a old metal garbage can, kind of like in a dark cartoon. Just imagine that. They had, I don't even remember what was in there, because I looked in there. I'm like, did the dog hop in here? They had like old cuttings, you know, I guess they did some yard work earlier that day. That was it, man. It was a tree, this vast area, the garbage can. That was it. And it literally, this dog, literally, it had no place to go. And later, it's like, I think my wife was like, did it climb the tree? And I'm like, well, you know, I mean, I'm sure, I even took pictures, man. It didn't go up the tree, all right? It was just weird, man. Like, as I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, it didn't come out the other side of the tree. It must have done a 90 degree, and my view is, you know, obscured by the tree. That's why I started making my way around. It's just freaking weird, man. But, you know, it sounds kind of crazy. I try to process. I don't talk to too many, especially too many of these older drivers I work with, you know, some 70-year-olds, you know, and they probably think I'm nuts. But, you know, maybe if I open it up to them, they might have some even crazier stories. Being on the road a lot longer than I have. But, man, I appreciate what you guys do. And, you know, thank you. And I'll keep on listening. All right, later.
All right, there we go. Thanks, Gabe. Thanks for calling that in. It's like the dog walked into a portal or something. It just vanished into thin air, went behind the tree, and then just blinked out of existence.
Dog Dwendies.
Or what? What? Maybe it wasn't a dog. Maybe it was like we've talked about, these trash bag Dwendies, but a dog-like form. I don't know. But the strange.
Fae. The Fae took its shape or something.
Very,
yeah.
Very strange. Thanks for calling that in. If you, too, want to call into the show and tell us one of your strange sightings to share with us and the people, you can do that, 888-393-2783. Cam?
Yeah.
Before we get out of here, a couple episodes ago, we did a... we had a person call in and also a person write in with a story about this phantom drumming sound.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I have a friend named Justin, and he listens to the show.
I happen to know this friend.
Yeah, you know him. And he's behind an episode, so he's been recently catching up. And
Catch up, you jackwagon.
He said when he heard the phantom drumming, it made the hair on his arm stand up. He claims that years ago, one of his ex-girlfriends he was dating at the time, folks were building a new home. I think he said near Livingston, Texas. I'm not sure the exact town, but they were building something. And while they were clearing the pad, they found a Native American artifact.
Uh-oh.
He doesn't remember what it was, but he knows that it was a Native American artifact. And after they built the home and had moved in, they started hearing this phantom drumming sound all the time.
Oh, that's crazy.
He heard it. The wife heard it. Everybody heard it. Now, Justin didn't hear it, but everybody that lived at the house.
That home, yeah.
And also, we had a story where there was water puddles showing up in the house. You remember that? The same thing was happening in this home. They would just find like wet-looking footprints. And this went on for a while. The grandparents heard it, everybody.
Wow.
And they eventually, he said at one point they wanted to add a built-in swimming pool, but they decided not to do that because they remembered discovering that artifact.
And they remember seeing Poltergeist.
Well, that's what I asked. I talked to him and he told me the story. I go, have you seen the movie Poltergeist? And he said, no, he hasn't seen it. And I told him about the, you know, kind of the same thing. Yeah. So I'm wondering, when they say Native American artifact, was it like a burial ground or something? And when they built that house there, it did disturb.
Man.
And I wonder how often that happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because all over this country, I mean, there's got to be all kinds of stuff built on burial grounds.
How many times does it happen and then it gets, people don't talk about it? Like, I know you have to disclose if there was like a murder in the home or a death in the home, something along those lines. You don't have to disclose if there was a ghost.
Well, and they may not, the people building it may not have been aware. They're just like, eh, whatever.
But I'm saying, like, if you built it, and you was experiencing it enough to where you didn't want to live there anymore, you'd just sell it. You wouldn't say a word.
Well, no. I think if you were a good, straight-up, honest person, you probably should mention
That's
it.
That's why I said you.
Yeah. But no, there's nothing stopping you. But then on the other hand, it might make the value more. Like, someone who's really into ghosts might want to move into that house.
I would Airbnb it for ghosts.
Well, there are people that do that. Like that one over there in Mineral Wells, like people, they think they charge $500 a night to just stay there.
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good. I don't need that.
I could spend that on something else, right?
Instead of that stuff. I don't need that in my life.
Hey, I got something, folks. If y'all ain't got anything going on September 17th and you want to harass some friends of ours, you need to go to the Archaeofest at Pinson Mounds in Jackson, Tennessee. So my homie Waldo, James Waldo, and our homie Jason Pintrell, and I believe Mr. Micah Hanks are all three going to be there. They're going to have a booth. They're going to be videoing. They're going to be, you know, handing out stuff, doing all that with the Seven Ages.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, that we've had on before several times, good friends of ours. So, yeah, if you want, and if y'all are around Jackson, Tennessee, you need to go to Archaeofest and go harass them. Go tell them that the guys at Expanded Perspectives just sent them there and just harass them. Make them give you free stuff. Yeah. Ask them all kinds of crazy questions. Just give them a hard time for us. That's what we like to do. Give them fellas a hard time. Filson, what have you got going to be going on? I know that you've got so much going on, you're not going to be able to come up to Reaper. You're not going to make this one.
I might be able to talk Luke into coming up there on Saturday. So my wife's going out of town. She's going to Arkansas. So I'm going to be Mr. Mom, and it's just going to be me and the boys at the house for the next couple days.
Well, the older boys definitely don't want you there.
Oh, no. And they definitely don't care about ReaperCon.
No, they don't. They're way... Luke does.
Luke is into that stuff. The, the bigger boys, they're too cool for dad. You know, they don't really want to do almost anything with me other than ask me for money. But... No, so that's what I'm going to be doing. So we might be able to come up there.
All right, yeah.
And if we do, I'll definitely holler at you.
Oh, yeah, I'll be kicking around up there. If not, we'll go to that Lone Star one.
Yeah, yeah. We'll run to that one's one much closer, and it's easier to get to. Yeah.
So we'll go there. So, yeah, that's what I got going on, man. We're going to tear out of here and hit the Reaper.
Well, that sounds awesome. If you want to email the show and share a story with me and Cam as well, the listeners, go ahead and do that. It's expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Like I said, you can call the show 888-393-2783. And you can follow us, of course, on all forms of social media. That's about all the time we have for this episode, folks. Till next time, be safe. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.